A United States Senate subcommittee heard testimony that a Chicago youth gang was armed and financed by federal poverty funds. I'll be back in a moment with the amazing facts about their benefactors and defenders. Hello, this is Joe Cruz on the Amazing Facts broadcast, facts which affect you. One of the most amazing stories to emerge from the lavish federal handout program involved a Chicago street gang and the First Presbyterian Church. According to testimony received by a Senate subcommittee in Washington, D.C., over $600,000 promised by the Office of Economic Opportunity was used to finance the criminal activities of the Blackstone Rangers, who used the church as a hangout and armed storage center. Out of all the conflicting confusion of charges and countercharges, one fact seemed to stand unchallenged. The pastor believed that the gang was justified in participating in civil disobedience because of the attitude of the police toward them. Now, strange as it seems, friends, we've actually come to a day when religious leaders and institutions are openly condoning disobedience to the basic laws of our government. And don't think for a moment that they always stopped at disobedience to man's laws. The whole philosophy is permeated with a permissiveness which also looks lightly on transgression of God's law as well. People are confused today. They often come and say, "I don't understand. As a child, I was taught to memorize the Ten Commandments. I received a bookmark or a gold star on a chart or something because I memorized the Ten Commandments. And then when later in life I realized I wasn't keeping all those commandments, when I was old enough to know that there was one commandment that said, 'Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy,' then I went to the minister and asked, 'Why is it we don't keep this commandment?' And then I was told the commandments were done away with. They were nailed to the cross. We're not under the law. We're under grace. So go ahead and disobey that commandment. It'll be all right." So many people are saying, "I just don't understand it. Why was I taught to memorize them if they're done away with?" And that's a very good question. A similar confusion comes as we hear popular preachers everywhere preaching against sin. Now, those preachers quote the Ten Commandments as evidence. They preach against adultery and quote the Seventh Commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." And that's all right. They preach against idol worship and quote the Second Commandment, "Thou shalt not make graven images or bow down to them." And that's perfectly all right. If you want to preach against swearing, quote the Third Commandment. That too's fine. It's perfectly all right in preaching against sin to quote the commandments as evidence that it's wrong, but as soon as you mention the commandment that the popular church is quite universally disobey, then you hear a strange cry. "I'm not under the law. I'm under grace. I can disobey God's commandments." Yeah, it's a strange and crooked way of reasoning, friends, yet it's a very popular kind of thinking in the religious world today. Perfectly all right to preach against swearing and adultery and stealing and murder and quote the Nine Commandments, but if we preach about keeping God's holy day, which is also one of the Ten Commandments, then suddenly the Ten Commandments are nailed to the cross or done away with, and we're not under the law, we're under grace. Now, when you begin to analyze this devious doctrine, it appears quite foolish. If we're at liberty to disobey the Sabbath command by saying the law was nailed to the cross and done away, or by saying, "I'm not under the law but under grace," then this reasoning applies to all Ten Commandments, not just one of the ten. But not very many people think it's just right to throw out all ten of them. Some will say, "Well, most of those commandments are repeated in the New Testament." Now, friends, it's true that many of them are. The Sabbath is repeated in the New Testament very clearly, for example. But there are some that are not repeated at all. For God never intended that the law be repeated as such in the New Testament. It wasn't necessary. It was given in the Old Testament. The New Testament takes for granted that we're to keep them. The apostles all quoted from the commandments profusely. It's clear that they were still considered to be God's law and an expression of His will. Obedience to them was expected, as we'll see in our study today. Now, the Bible's very clear that God's law is always to stand. I think of a statement like the one Jesus made in Matthew 5:17, where He said, "Think not that I am come to destroy the law. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. For until the heavens and earth pass, not one jot or tittle shall pass from the law till all be fulfilled." Now, friends, heaven and earth are still very much with us. Jesus said, as long as they last, the law remains. And Jesus said, not any of it. Not even the dotting of an I or crossing of a T was to be changed. He went on to say that anybody who breaks one of the least commandments and teaches others to do it will be called least in the kingdom of God. And those who teach men to keep them will be called great by the kingdom of God. Oh, I hear some people quote that text in a strange way. They say Christ told us he came not to destroy the law and the prophets, but to fulfill. And they say to fulfill means to bring to an end, to do away with it. Well, if this interpretation is true, notice how absurd it makes the statement of Jesus sound. When he said, think not that I'm come to destroy the law and the prophets, I'm not come to destroy, but to do away with. Now, I wouldn't try to put such impossible contradictions into the mouth of Jesus, friends. In Matthew 3:15, Jesus told John the Baptist that he must fulfill all righteousness. Now, I wonder if we're to think that they brought an end to or did away with all righteousness. Of course not. To fulfill righteousness means to fill it up and live it out in obedience, not to do away with it. Jesus came to live out the righteousness of God's law, not to bring an end to it. And then I think of what Jesus said in Matthew 15:3-9. He said, we should not follow traditions of men which are in contradiction to the law of God. This makes us transgress the law. He said, but in vain they do worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And he added, you make the commandments of God of none effect by your tradition. So notice how Christ taught that we should not disregard his commandments. When the rich young ruler came to Christ and said, what good thing shall I do to enter into life? What was Jesus' answer? He said, if thou wilt enter into life, keep the commandments. Now, this doesn't mean that by keeping the commandments he could earn salvation. But as far as following the will of God was concerned, and the commandments, the will of God is actually revealed. God expects his followers to keep the commandments, friends. In James 2:10-12, we see the duty of complete obedience. For whosoever shall keep the whole law, and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now if thou commit no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye, and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. Now notice that the Bible calls the Ten Commandments the law of liberty. You know, there's some people who take some of Paul's statements and read them in such a way as to make it sound like Paul is doing away with the commandments and abrogating the law of God. Then they infer that we may ignore one or more of the Ten Commandments. But we must notice that when Paul reached his conclusion at the end of the chapter, he said this, do we then make void the law through faith? God forbid, yea, we establish the law. Now, we may not be clever enough to follow all of Paul's reasoning, friends. It's difficult in some places. Even Peter, you remember, wrote some things that were hard to understand. He said Paul wrote some things that were hard to understand, that he couldn't even understand. So I may not be able to follow all of Paul's reasoning about the law, but there's one thing I'm very sure of, and that is this, that if I come to the very opposite conclusion that Paul comes to, something is wrong with the way I reason. Don't you think so? I've not followed his thinking correctly. When Paul is all through with his difficult reasoning, he comes to the conclusion that the law is established and not done away with. And if I follow Paul's reasoning and come to the conclusion that the law is done away and that I can disobey it, then I fail somehow to follow Paul's good intentions, haven't I? We certainly can read his plain conclusion that the law was to be upheld. But you ask, what are some of the answers to these seeming contradictions? Well, first of all, in Ephesians 2, we read about commandments and ordinances, it says, which were separating between Jews and Gentiles, such as the ordinance of circumcision. There were some commandments that have to do with ordinances or with ceremonies. Colossians 2 tells us about ordinances or decrees which were a shadow of things to come or a symbol of Christ. Now, there were commandments that had to do with types and shadows of Jesus, those things that illustrated his atonement, the ordinances of the old Jewish system. There were commandments that told them to bring a lamb and shed its blood and sprinkle it on the altar. There were commandments that had to do with the priest and the sanctuary of the Old Testament times. All these ordinances of the Old Testament were given to God's people until Christ should come. He was the reality to which the type pointed. When Christ died on Calvary's cross as the true sacrifice, then all the symbol sacrifices of lambs and so forth came to their end. They had met the object to which they pointed, and no longer were those commandments that surrounded the ordinances to be followed. So the apostle tells us that the commandments contained in ordinances, the bloody sacrifices, came to an end when Jesus died on Calvary's cross. There were also some special feast days and days of solemn celebration connected with the services and ceremonies of the old sanctuary, and they were also shadows of Christ, and they were also done away with. Because they were commanded to rest on these special days, the days that were actually called Sabbaths, because the word Sabbath means rest, and these were yearly rest or Sabbaths, you remember the mention of these days in the Bible. The Passover, Pentecost, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles. These days were shadows of Jesus. For instance, Jesus is the true atonement. So when his atonement was made on Calvary, it was no longer necessary to keep the old Day of Atonement. Jesus is the true Passover Lamb. So after his sacrifice, the old Passover services came to an end. You see, these days, which were ceremonial Sabbaths, were nailed to the cross and came to an end. This is what Paul meant there in Colossians 2 when he talked about the Sabbaths that were a shadow of things to come and how they were nailed to the cross. Now, these ceremonial Sabbaths came once a year, like our Thanksgiving or 4th of July. But the weekly seventh-day Sabbath was not a shadow of Jesus, as we've learned. It stands always. The Passover Sabbath, just like our 4th of July, celebrated their deliverance from Egyptian bondage. It was their Independence Day. It also showed forth the fact that it was through Jesus as the blood on the doorpost that they were delivered from the destroying angel as well as from their masters in Egypt. So Jesus, then, is our true Passover. His blood covers our sin and will not be destroyed in the punishment of the wicked. We're set free in him from the enslavement of Satan. But what about the seventh-day Sabbath, friends? Is it to be classed with these temporary ceremonial Sabbaths? Of course not. It was never a type or a shadow. It was not part of the commandments contained in the ordinances. Rather, the seventh-day Sabbath was given by God in the Ten Commandments, written on tables of stone in the moral law that was to stand forever, the law which Jesus said will stand as long as heaven and earth shall stand. So there's a very definite difference between the Ten Commandments, which are moral commandments, and the commandments contained in ordinances, which had to do with the ceremonies of the old Jewish dispensation. And it's because the unlearned misapply Bible statements about these different kinds of laws that they become confused. And now, this is Joe Cruz saying goodbye for today.